Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Our topic today is Christmas. Yes, that's right. Many of us, like me, are back at work, having already enjoyed our holiday and long since packed away our Christmas ornaments and memories. But Orthodox Christians follow the Julian calendar instead of the Gregorian calendar, and Christmas for them is tomorrow, January 7th, an event they celebrate with much activity, including starring. Beginning tomorrow and for the next several days or even weeks, they will enjoy starring, carrying a beautifully decorated and spinning star throughout their community, visiting family and friends, and singing carols. This happens on the Aleutians, on Kodiak, on St. Paul and St. George Islands, in Anchorage, in the Yukon, and in the YK Delta. This is a widespread and vibrant practice among Alaska Orthodox Christians. I first heard about it years ago and was always curious about it and feel so satisfied that with a program on Hometown Alaska, we get to talk about it and explore it and share it with our listeners. And before I introduce our guest, I just want to say thank you to all the people who liked this program on Facebook. We had more than 1,000 people who, and that's a big number for us. And so I'm hoping we hear from some of you today. Maybe not all 1,000, right? But at least some of you, maybe with stories. Maybe you come from a region in Alaska where you grew up doing this, or maybe you still do it. Maybe you're in Anchorage and you're going to participate in some events tomorrow. So we'd love to hear from you and hear about the meaning that this has in your lives. I would like to welcome my guest, Reverend Michael Alexa. Welcome, Father Alexa.
Thank you very much, Kathleen.
And we go back a ways. You came over to the Anchorage Daily News years ago and gave some cross-cultural training, I think. That's my memory of that.
It's more than probable. I'm still doing those things. I've been doing those cross-cultural trainings for over 40 years
now. Yeah, and certainly a newspaper that is traveling all around the state and encountering these really different cultures than a reporter might have grown up in. It's really a valuable thing. So I remember that. I also wanted to give a shout out to Andronik Kashavarov.
Yes.
We were hoping he was going to be here today, and he grew up on St. George Island, is in Anchorage now for family reasons. We had hoped he could join us, but we just want to say hello and thank him for thinking about us and considering it. He was very steeped in these traditions in St. George, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So if you're listening, Andronik, we thank you and we wish you a wonderful Christmas this year. We also are hoping that we can hear from Father Ilya Larson, born in Napaskiak, now with St. Sophia Church in Bethel. And he's been scurrying around Bethel this morning trying to find a landline that he can actually call us in on. So we'll see if that works. And you have many stories about him, Father Alexa, growing up in rural Alaska, being, I think you called him the, what did you call him, the...
It was the sort of seeing eye dog of the walking stick.
Yes, the walking stick. That was
of Matthew Bereskin, one of the great heroes of Orthodoxy in the Napaskiak and the Lower Kuskokwim.
Yeah. So that's what we have for you today. But we're going to start off kind of giving people a little bit of context for Russian Orthodoxy in America and in Alaska in particular. But first, I just would like to know a little bit more about you, Father Alexa. I've always associated you with the Orthodox Church, but, you know, I didn't know if you were born in Ukraine, born in Russia. Turns out you were born in
Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Just so very American. And you were a Lutheran when you began, right?
Yes. Well, I was actually baptized in the Orthodox Church as an infant. But my father and his side of the family are Orthodox. My mother, on the other hand, was of German descent and Lutheran. She went to church every Sunday, and her church was one block away.
It was easier. Yeah.
Way easier. And my father went, let's say, less frequently to church, and it was a distance to go, and all the services there were still in Church Slavonic. While the Lutheran church had services in both English and German, but at least there was some English.
Yeah.
So my sister, brother, and I were pretty much taken on a regular basis, Sunday school and later on catechetical classes to the Lutheran church. And then when I was a teenager, I became interested in religion much more than previously and started reading about different Christian faiths and kind of rediscovered my own roots in Orthodoxy, even though going to church still meant hearing the service sung and celebrated, and even the sermon delivered in Ukrainian.
Wow.
So I had to get
easy to get a grip on.
Right. So I had to get a bilingual missal with English on one page and the Ukrainian on the other page and kind of follow along.
And was this still back in Allentown?
Oh, back in Allentown, yeah.
I want to throw out our phone numbers before we go too far. You know, just hearing your story and the winding way that you found your way, that might mean something to our listeners who are actually seekers or curious. So, you know, we We welcome your calls. You can give us a call at 550-8433, or if you're outside Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we'd also welcome your emails to hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I just to finish up your bio a little bit here, now this says you've been in Alaska for 35 years, but it might be a little longer than that now.
It's going to be 45 now.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And you were a village priest. Where were you a village priest?
Starting in Old Harbor. My first parish as a priest was Dillingham and about 14 villages around Dillingham, Bristol Bay area. And then we went back to Kodiak Island. I served here in Anchorage for a number of years, and then we started the parish in Fairbanks. And then for a few years, I was in what I called California exile, terribly homesick for Alaska.
California, we're northern or southern?
Northern, Santa Rosa.
Okay.
The climate was wonderful, but it was just too far from Alaska.
Yeah.
And then we came to Juneau for 5 years. I was dean of the seminary in Kodiak. We lived in Seward and Koliganik, one of our favorite villages in the whole state. And then back to Anchorage.
Wow. Wow. Another thing I note here is you did a four-part PBS television series. Is that still available? It's called Communicating Across Cultures.
Yes, we did that at KTOO in Juneau, my goodness, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's available at the Lusac Library. You can get it in DVD. And
yeah.
It's a five-part series. I recently did a prequel.
Oh, okay.
So now it's five parts.
And I mean, it's interesting to hear you talk. I kind of like want to say, where haven't you been in Alaska?
There are a few villages. I could list them, though, on the fingers of my two hands,
Yeah. Well, one of the things I wanted to say is, I mentioned early on that we got a lot of response to this program, and I immediately started getting some Facebook messages from people, and I just wanted to share a few of them that came in. One came from Andy Perala, who lived in Unapacheck, which was in the Bethel area. His parents were school teachers in 69 to 71. And he remembers going house to house. He calls it the last night of Christmas. I don't know what that's about. But and there was a lot of sharing. He said the humblest of homes shared what they had. Sometimes you would just get to warm yourself in their house. That's what they had to offer. Sometimes there was a little bit of food or a treat. And he remembers the music. But he admits he was in high school and he was looking at the girls. So there. I also personally heard from Jane Baird, who said she grew up, she was a kid in Koliganik. And she did not attend the Russian Orthodox Church, but her brother and sister and she would go from house to house singing and eating. It was a beautiful tradition. So she remembers it. And then there was one other note, and we talked about this before the show, Father, a little bit of history here. We're going to go back to someone bringing up the point that starring Ukrainian Catholics have also done this. We talked a little bit about a history. Maybe in a sentence or two, we could just sum that up for people. Yes, it's true.
Yes.
But well, there's a caveat
the Carpathian, this is a custom. The following a Christmas star with the singers trailing behind, singing church hymns and folk carols, is a custom throughout the Carpathian Mountains, which separate Poland and Slovakia, cut through western Ukraine and into Romania. And in all those countries, they have a star and folk carols.
Mm-hmm.
What's unique about our tradition, or pretty much unique, is that our stars are big pinwheels and they spin.
We have video on our website that people can see. If you don't have a picture of this, they're big. They're about as bigger than a person's trunk, really.
Yeah, usually. I mean, some can be smaller, but it's easier. Most of them are rather large. Last night at my house, we had a star that was probably 3.5 feet across, made of glass.
Wow.
And we don't know who made it, but it's probably close to 100 years old, and it came from the village of Bjorka, which was abandoned in World War II when the Bjorkans, along with the Unangan Aleuts, were put into internment camps in southeast Alaska.
It's not the Aleutian Islands. It was southeast Alaska?
No. The Bjorka is near Unalaska.
Okay.
But when the people left in 1942, and the people of Bjorka were never allowed to return. So if it was made in Bjorka, that star had to be made before World War II.
And,
so it's
and
a pretty
glass.
Old star,
it
and it's made of
think...
glass, and it's very heavy. It probably weighs about 30 pounds, because glass is not so light.
Yeah.
And it's hand-painted with Alaskan wildflowers and really Alaskan decorations all over the front of it, and then the icon of Christ in the manger with the Virgin
in the center
with the star.
Did it spin?
Yes.
Wow.
But it's impossible for one person to hold it with one hand and spin it with the other. It comes with its own stand to support it so that the person holding it can also spin it.
Wow. Well, what I want to do is, you and I have talked that there are different traditions all the way around Alaska. in some areas, you know, indigenous traditions have been folded right into the Orthodox traditions, especially in the YK Delta, I think.
I think especially there.
Yeah. But the Aleutians had a very rich history, you know, Kodiak.
Bristol Bay, Nishigak region.
And they're not all the same.
No.
Right? So there's a lot of variation. One of the things we talked about before the program is that the Russian Orthodox faith is a welcoming, it's not a overbearing religion. You look at the traditions, and if they don't conflict, why not embrace them? That's essentially how I heard
you. That's pretty
much
the way the missionaries approached the Alaska Native, well, the Siberian Native peoples first, but they had some missionary experience hundreds of years before coming to Alaska. The people there, like Alaska Native people, believed in the inherent sanctity of the earth. Our church believes that too. So
no conflict. Yeah.
Believing that the animals have spirits that need to be at least respected, not worshiped particularly like animists, but respected because it's a living thing, and the life in living things is sacred no matter what outer shape it takes.
Yeah.
So those basic attitudes just flow directly from Siberia into Alaska without any problem.
Right, right. Well, I'm just going to interrupt you here a little bit and to say that I believe we have Father Ilya Larson on the phone with us. Hello, Father Larson.
Yes, how are you today?
Hi! Thank you for calling in. This has been a journey that Father Ilya and I have been on together because I've been calling him in Bethel, where he is pastor of St. Sophia Church. But he grew up in Napaskiak, one of the regions that has an incredibly rich starring tradition. So, Father Ilya, I was wondering if you could kind of describe what it was like when you were a boy, what the starring was like in your village.
The celebration of the birth of Jesus Christ, from the time that I grew up, the time that I became aware of who I am, my identity, and who I worship, was brought forth today, starting today on the 6th, and people were and are always excited to draw near, approach, and to taste of Christmas. And everybody was involved, everyone. It started off with giving gifts to the people who are named after the loved ones that we have lost in the past few years, and their memory becomes alive with the birth of Jesus Christ. Now, and I remember going home to home, delivering small gifts or big gifts, and people were always grateful of what they had received, and in return, they also give a small gift to the person who gave it. And in the evening, at about 7 p.m., was compline and matins, a special service dedicated for the celebration of Jesus Christ's birth. And I remember almost everybody from the village came to the evening service, because the first part of the service was exciting. It was dark. It was dark inside the church. But the candles lit the whole house of the church and made that darkness fade away into brightness. And kind of reminded the people that once we were living in the dark, now with the birth of Jesus Christ approaches and draws near the light of the world. And the very next day was a liturgy. And right after the liturgy, we'd go and take the stars that were hung inside the church for the whole year.
Oh, I did not know that.
We were blessed with a prayer. And then the first actual singing of the carols was inside the church. It was not a very long service. The troparion, or the theme song, and the second theme song, which is called the Kondakion, were sung inside the church. And that was it. And then we made our procession to the first home, and the first home was usually the priest's home. And inside that home, the elder choir singers, the junior choir singers, and anyone who knew the star or the caroling songs, they sung at the top of their lungs, which sounded very beautiful. It was very exhilarating. Like it was just renewing. It was a renewal of the soul. It was so, so beautiful. Mm. And today, I still experience that here in Bethel with the St. Sophia Choir.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Do you star in Bethel?
The songs were sung. Say again.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
The songs were sung in Yupik, English, and I do believe it's Slavonic or Russian. We've never questioned what the words had meant in Slavonic or Russian, because that's what we grew up into.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we can see side by side what the song is all about, because there was an English version and Yupik version and the Slavonic version of that song.
Yeah. You know, I would like to bring in Father Alexa a little bit, because he's talked about the blending of Yupik culture and Orthodox. So I think you mentioned, Father Ilya, that you would give a gift to the people who were named after those who had passed. So this recalling and memorializing people who had passed that year, is that particularly Yupik, or is it also Orthodox?
I think the Yupiks are the only ones who do that.
Okay.
So that's I think before they became Christian in the winter, close to the solstice, Yupik villages had memorial feasts and invited whole villages to come visit them, and the guests received gifts in memory of the relatives and friends who had died the previous year. Father Ilya's observation that gifts were given especially to the children who were named after those who had departed this life is also a good, important aspect of it.
Right, right. I just want to, if people have tuned in after we started, they might be wondering, let's tell them that this is a program about starring, which is going to happen here in Anchorage and all over Alaska, probably starting tomorrow, although you had some starring in your house last night.
We staged a kind of mock starring for, if I can mention the competition, Channel 11. Rhonda McBride brought a video with her, a videographer with her, and they recorded more or less what starring looks like, but her program is on Sunday. We wouldn't start starring until Friday. There wasn't enough time to put together a TV show.
So we kind of squeezed
it all in last night.
Well, I want to ask, and I'm asking Father Ilya and Father Alexa, where do these stars go? I heard Father Ilya say they used to stay in the church all year. They were blessed, and then they stayed in the church. Is that what happens today at St. Sophia or at churches here?
The church usually has its own star, and it is kept in the church, and it's only taken down like tomorrow, and then the people follow that star. So now we have such large villages. I know in Quethluk there are two, maybe three stars, and I think that's also true in Napaskiak, isn't it, Father Ilya? There's more than one star.
And Napaskiak has, two stars right now.
Uh-huh.
Ah, so does a star represent a church then?
There's some stars that belong to the church.
Okay.
But that big glass one that I mentioned is the property of one particular family, because the village where it originated no longer exists.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of varies. Here in Anchorage, I know we have a Yuzinki star, although the village of Yuzinki has its own star back in their church.
Uh-huh.
But there are enough Yuzinki people here in Anchorage
that they built
their own star, and they go caroling among their own people, the Yuzinki.
Yeah. Yeah.
In crowd, so to speak.
I'm just going to throw our phone numbers out there just in case we hear from any of these folks in Anchorage who are going to be starring tonight. It's 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So in a video that we posted on alaskapublic.org from the Aleutians, these are very big. They're very elaborate. You mentioned a glass one.
Mm-hmm.
Father Ilya, what do the stars look like in Napaskiak and in Bethel?
From my recollection, from growing there are two stars given to the faithful. One for adolescent, back then when I was adolescent, it was a great big star. It was built by a local man by the name of Guzma and Anisim Jacob. And they were excellent, excellent metal workers. And both of the stars were built by them. One was glass. It was very ornate. It was very beautiful. And because of how fragile it looked, it was given to the adults. And that star led the adults house to house, while the younger generation, at my time, we had, I think it was aluminum and copper.
Mm-hmm.
But they were both built so beautiful and so ornate. And in the center of them was the image of the Nativity, or the birth of Jesus Christ.
Right.
And from my recollection growing up at different parts of the year, I would still see the two stars inside the church hung and covered. And that's what I've always seen and observed down in the Poskiek.
Hmm.
The stars here and in Dillingham are made of wood.
And the Aleutian image, which was from the 30s and 40s, it's wooden.
Yeah, they're wooden. And there was a man in Dillingham, Tommy Yaakov, who invented the collapsible star, where all the points were on hinges and folded in so that you could set it on a table and it looked like a Christmas tree. And then when you were ready to open it, there was a rubber band or a tie at the top that the spokes of the star would open, and it was ready to be twirled. But when you came into a house and there was not so much room, with sometimes 200 people jammed into a house,
yeah,
his collapsible star was the most practical, especially now for here in Anchorage, where we have to get in and out of cars. We can't
right.
walk from house to house
right.
like in a village. So
Innovation.
Right. So there are some innovations now for the 21st century.
Yeah. Father Ilya, I won't keep you on too much longer, but I did want to ask you, will there be services this evening, and will the star come out this evening, or in Bethel, because I know you're not in the Poskiek. So, or does it all happen sort of beginning tomorrow at the end of services tomorrow?
Yes, tonight 6:30 we have what is called matin or compline and matins. And just like what I explained earlier, the church is darkened a bit but lit by candle.
Mm-hmm.
And the star here in Bethel was brought down into the what is called the iconostasis, or the icon screen, and had been placed right there at the front end of the Orthodox Church, where the faithful now sees that, and just ready right now.
Yeah.
Will you start starring then after tomorrow's liturgy?
Yes, tomorrow morning, right after liturgy.
Mm-hmm. You know, Father Ilya, I want to ask you, since you, Father Alexis said that you were the walking stick for another...
Matthew Bereskin.
When you were a young, very young person in the Poskiek, I sort of want to ask you, what's your favorite thing? You've grown up in this tradition, the music, the darkness and the candles. What is your favorite thing about this time? Maybe we lost him, or maybe he can't choose his favorite thing. He's still there, but we can't. Maybe he can't hear us. Yeah. Well, okay. We may have lost Father Larson, but thank you. I want to thank him very much. It was not an easy thing for him to do. Apparently, cell phone service is tricky in Bethel. He had to travel pretty far to try to find a landline and I'm not even sure he got a landline. Maybe this was still his cell phone. So we did lose him. So anyway, thank you very much, Father Ilya. And I think lots of people around Alaska know you and know that you like to talk about starring, and you did a fabulous job for us today. So thank you for making the effort. And now we're going to lean more heavily on Father Alexa. We sort of covered the Yupik area, which is YK Delta. I was encouraged to try to find someone in the Yukon, which I didn't succeed in doing.
But it's really the Noosugak that has a unique tradition,
okay,
different from the Yukon-Kuskokwim. Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta has retained what I believe is an ancient Yupik custom. This time of year, you gather, you have a feast, and you remember your departed loved ones and give gifts and have a feast in their memory, very much like Southeast Alaskan Tlingit people, for example, would have a potlatch.
Mm-hmm.
They have a potlatch a year after the person has died, so it's not really on a calendar in any way. But the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, it's been subsumed by Slavic, by starring. So you remember your deceased relatives, especially those who have passed away the previous year. And if when the star comes to that particular house, there's inevitably a much larger dinner or banquet. 200 people, and there's only room for 10 at a time to sit at the dining room table. So it's 20 sittings. It
wow.
takes several hours for everyone to enjoy the feast.
Right.
And then you go to the next house, and you sing again for 45 minutes, maybe half an hour. And then you sit down and do it again.
And eat again.
And eat again.
Yeah.
And this goes on for 7, 8, 9 days. So you need 2 stars now because our villages, my wife says in her time, Kwithluk was small enough for the star to visit all the houses for the first 3 nights of Christmas. Now it only goes to each house once, and it takes almost a week to get to each house just once.
Wow.
The dinners have become more elaborate. There's more food available, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the feasting. And then if someone has died in that particular household or close relative, they give gifts often associated with that person. For example, when my mother-in-law died a decade ago, when the star came to our house, we not only had a meal for her, a memorial meal, but we gave away gifts that might be associated with her. She was a great knitter. So we gave away knitting needles and skeins of yarn.
Mm,
you see what
memory.
I'm saying?
Yeah.
In memory of my mother-in-law.
And what she represented.
That's right. And in some places, gifts, we gave away the plates that people ate on. So everybody took home their dinnerware. We didn't buy paper plates that year. We bought glass.
Real plates.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And people. So and the knives and spoons. So anytime people use that plate again at their home, they can think of the Christmas where they were at our house, but also in memory of my mother-in-law. So that's the Yukon-Kuskokwim tradition.
Okay.
The other part of that I mentioned earlier was that whole villages would be invited to come.
Right.
To a village. In the Noosugak and Iliamna Lake, that's what they've preserved. They don't have a big dinner in every house, but the home expects the star to visit them and sing a repertoire of 5 to 10 minutes. Then the householder gives a donation of cash, as they put it, to the star, which the star represents that particular church. So the Stuyahok star will visit all the houses in Stuyahok, and then in procession, following the star by snow machine, head upriver to Kalligonik and go to all the houses in Kalligonik.
Wow.
And then they'll go over to Igiagik or Leevilok and all around the villages of Iliamna Lake, Kachanak and Iliamna, Newhalen and Nandalton. Eventually, they all wind up in Dillingham. So there'll be a time in Dillingham where there'll be 5 or 6 or 7 different village stars going house to house. And there's not a big meal, but there is the donation to the star. And each parish then collects thousands of dollars in donations for their parish church during starring. And this is inter-village visitation. And I've flown over the Noosugak at Christmas time. And looking down, you can see dozens of snow machines with their headlights on, following their star up or down river to the next village where they're going to go starring one more time. So
yeah.
It's another part of the tradition, the ancient tradition, that has been preserved in a different way in a different section of the Yupik region.
You know, I'm just thinking about how the climate might be affecting people's ability to get up and down the rivers. I know Father Napaskiak said that it was difficult out of Bethel. The river was not safe.
Climate change is a threat to starring.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a little break. We're going to come back and talk about some other regions. We'll probably talk about Kodiak, the Aleutians. We may talk a little bit about the history of the Orthodox Church coming into Alaska. So thank you, Father Alexa, for joining me. You'll be back in the next half hour. And you're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. We've been having some fun in the studio today. We're talking about Orthodox Christmas. Sometimes it's called Russian Christmas, but that's kind of a misnomer. We just finished talking with Father Ilya Larson from in Bethel now, but he grew up in Napaskiak, which is a region that has a very rich tradition. Many villages in that area have a very rich tradition. And the first half hour, we're talking about how many long-standing, thousands of years tradition of Yupik culture were folded into Orthodox Christmas. We're back. We're going to talk about some other regions of Alaska. We are going to see if we can't hunt down a little bit of this music, and if we find any, we will let you know. I'm getting a thumbs up. We might have some music. Do you want to play it now? Okay, you're going to hear a little bit of Ukrainian carol.
You know this one, Carol of the Bells.
Is this traditional?
In Ukraine. I don't think anybody in Alaska knows it.
Okay. It's beautiful.
It's been translated into English and is performed by certain choirs, but it's rather integral.
Intricate choral. Complex.
Complex.
Very sophisticated.
If online we can find something like Nebo I Zemlya, everyone in Alaska, I think that's one carol that is pretty much has permeated the entire state.
Every region.
Means heaven and Zemlya is earth. The name of the carol is Heaven and Earth, Nebo I Zemlya.
N-E-B-O?
N-E-B-O.
And then Z-E?
M Zemlya, L-Y-A.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see.
If you can find that.
Yeah.
I found it yesterday online, so
okay.
Several renditions, actually.
This is a good test for our engineers.
The odd thing, we call this Russian Christmas, but I doubt if any Russians would recognize it.
Right.
Starring is not known in Moscow or St. Petersburg or Irkutsk. It's a Western Ukrainian Carpathian mountain region custom. So we call it Russian Christmas, but there's almost like nothing Russian
about
it.
Well, that's something we can clear up. But I hear we found your song.
Let's hear that. Who knows who's singing it. But
what do the words mean?
Heaven and earth now celebrate. Anheli ljudi, anheli ljudi veselo. Greet each other with the feast. And then the chorus is the fun part because it repeats and it rhymes. Christos rozdivsya, Christ is born. Bog voplotivsya, God is incarnate. Bog profetivsya. Angeli spivayut, angels sing. Tsari vitayut, greeting the king. Poklin vidayut, falling down in worship. The shepherds exclaim, a miracle, a miracle. Chudo, chudo.
Now, this is something that will be played all over Alaska, or sung all over Alaska.
Even though in the Aleutian Islands, where their repertoire is mostly church hymns, liturgical texts, they sing that one. Somehow Nebo I Zemlya has become carol that has permeated the entire state.
You've talked about carols and then liturgy, and help me with what the difference is.
Well, the liturgical texts for Christmas were composed in the 7th and 8th century. In our tradition, you know, that's like late.
Yeah. So just yesterday.
The 7th and 8th centuries. And we know the composers of them, but they were composed in Greek. And then in the Byzantine Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And then as other cultures embraced Christianity and became Orthodox Christians in Bulgaria and Romania, moving up the Balkan Peninsula, Serbia, Ukraine, those texts were translated into those languages,
mm-hmm.
which is Church Slavonic today.
Okay.
That's in the 10th or 11th century. And then, so those texts are what all Orthodox Christians in all those countries share. We mm-hmm. sing the same hymns.
Mm-hmm.
We have the same services. We have the same creed. They're all different languages and cultures and musical traditions, but it's the same. But these carols that we also have added to the repertoire are uniquely from the Carpathian Mountains. And how they got to Alaska, we have no idea.
I read somewhere in one of the background stories I was looking for, talked about one Ukrainian priest that brought the carols. Is that a myth?
Well, that's in my book, so it's the only guess that
okay.
I had. That Father Yakov Korchinski, who was in the Bethel area about 100 years ago, is the only priest that we know who actually came from the Western Ukraine, from the Carpathian region, who could have possibly introduced the Kolyadi, the folk carols, into that region. But the starring is everywhere.
Yeah.
And Father Korchinski was not everywhere. So
still a mystery.
This custom had to be brought, probably, I'm guessing, because I was in one place in Siberia where they had a star, even though it was in the middle of Russia. I think people were from that town must have been exiled there by in Tsarist times or Stalinist times,
yes,
from Ukraine.
Yes.
And they brought their Christmas customs with them. So it did make that leap. But in the 20th century, our starring has been here longer than that. So
yeah,
it's exactly 12 time zones between Alaska and Western Ukraine. It's half the globe away. And it's not a continuity. The custom didn't spread all the way across Russia to get here, because it's not known in Russia. It skipped 11 time zones. So how did it make that leap? We don't know. But here it is.
Well, we'll throw it out there, see if anybody can offer you an answer. If you'd like to call in and talk with us, it's 550-8433, 1-888-353-5752 around the state, or you can email us at hometownalaskapublic.org. There's so many mysteries, and it makes it intriguing, you know.
It's uniquely Alaskan.
Yes, it is.
Around Kodiak Island, Kodiak Island and the Aleutic people have the starring. The star comes with a shorter repertoire than most places, not as elaborate as the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. But they follow up Christmas with a custom called masking, maskaladas.
I read about that in your book, yeah. It was scary.
It's kind of scary. I mean, I remember being told that originally, at least in Old Harbor, the maskers were viewed as very frightening creatures.
Scary.
Now, the mayor of Old Harbor, Sven Hawkinson Sr., told me that their explanation of that was that this commemorated the slaughter of the innocent two-year-olds and under that Herod ordered when the wise man betrayed him and went home without telling him where Jesus was.
Mm.
So he ordered the massacre of all the two-year-old children, which shows that it took the Magi 2 years to get there. They found the young child in the house by the time they arrived.
Right.
And Herod tried to kill the child by starting with the two-year-olds.
Right.
But the soldiers who were sent were Israelis. They were local men. So they didn't dare kill the children and let the mothers know who was doing this. So
they would not survive.
So they masked.
Uh-huh. I see.
And therefore the maskaradaks are the commemoration of the terrifying soldiers who came to slaughter the children. I doubt if that's the origin of this custom. My own hunch is that in pre-Christian times, this was the time of Alaskan native ceremonial life. And therefore there were people who either had not been baptized and were still practicing the old religion where the dancing was done with masks.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them then were baptized, but they were sort of fluctuating back and forth between the old dancing and the Christian celebration. And because the tradition still is, even now, those who participate in masking have to receive a special blessing before they can come back into the church.
Oh, that's
so you see, so there had to be a time when the masking was sort of frowned upon or discouraged, and now it's been amalgamated. It's been, as you said, folded in,
uh-huh,
and it's more like a Halloween.
It reminded me of was Halloween.
And very much so in Nanwalek, they actually gather as a community, and the maskers come in almost in procession, and people have to guess who they are.
Yeah.
But it's a fun time. It's nothing scary about it anymore.
It's become
just a community event.
Yeah. You know, you've mentioned food a couple times, like 12 courses, one for every holy man, or just because people like to eat a lot. I was wondering, is there specific foods, or are they just traditional foods of the region that are served in abundance?
In Ukraine, it's very specifically, you can get a Ukrainian cookbook and it will list the 12 dishes that you're supposed to have for Christmas Eve dinner. So it's very much
detailed.
Very detailed. In Alaska, it's whatever people have put aside to save for. I mean, if you're going to have a gudeg, you've picked the berries for Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
You planned
on that last July.
Yes,
right. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Any sweet that is associated with this? Well, the ice cream, I guess you were saying.
A gudeg, certainly.
A gudeg, yeah. But there's nothing baked or nothing.
For Easter, for Pascha, definitely.
Uh-huh.
The Ukrainians have a special bread just for Christmas, too, and poppy seed roll that you can buy at the East European Deli here in town.
Right,
so,
right.
So, yeah,
there
poppy seed
things.
Rolls, there are some things that the Slavic people would identify as Christmas food, but it's never become that way in rural Alaska.
Uh-huh. So maybe only in an urban area would you find something like that.
Well, and with immigrant people who are used to those particular foods for that particular holiday.
Right. Is there redemption involved in in this Christmas ceremony? Is there any confessing or renewal that happens at this time?
The renewal, on one hand, is the remembrance of your ancestors.
Right, right.
The idea actually is, among certainly the Yupik people, they're singing along with us. They're participating in the celebration. And by the way, the stars conclude at the cemetery with the graves illuminated with lanterns or lights, so that the final rendition of everything sung at Christmas is sung at the cemetery with the ancestors, we believe, participating in the celebration.
So that is a reunion of some sort, yes. I'm going to welcome a caller.
Great.
Hi, Sonia.
Hi.
Could this be the Sonia Sankowski who has been communicating with us about this show? Well, thank you for calling in.
I'm delighted to. This is such a fascinating topic to me.
Well, you're Ukrainian, right?
Yeah. So my family's Ukrainian. My parents came over from Ukraine, so I'm first generation American. And I've just been astounded this season. You know, every year I learn a little more about my heritage. And this year is really the first time I put all the pieces together and figured out, first of all, what a uniquely Alaskan tradition the starring here is.
Mm-hmm.
And also, my gosh, you played Nebo I Zemla, and that's like a beloved carol. And to hear that and to know that that carol is throughout Alaska just thrills me. I mean, I'm ready to get on a plane right now and go out to Bethel.
They have like 10 verses, too, by the way. In my family in Allentown, we only had like 3 or 4.
I need someone to teach them all to me.
yeah. Well, I remember, Sonia, you had Ukrainian traditions. I remember Ukrainian eggs, but was that associated with Easter or Christmas or not at all?
Eggs are Easter.
Okay.
Pysanki.
I was really curious about the foods. I know that there is, we have Sviati Vecher, which is the
Holy
Christmas
Supper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 12-course meal. And I know that there are some variations and similarities, or as I was reading around it, it looks like there are, and pardon me if I missed you covering this, but is the Sviati Vecher also a part of the Alaska tradition?
No, I think not, because the raw materials for making those dishes weren't available.
One other interesting thing that I've learned in my time here is, this is a meal that's normally made during Easter, but my mother's actually making it right now for Christmas time, too.
Hmm.
We have a pork and aspic or pig's feet and aspic kind of thing that's done around.
Oh, studenina.
Yeah. We'll call it studenets, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mentioned this to somebody from the Bristol Bay region, and she said, we make this with, I think it was with seal. With the flipper?
Huh.
Something like that. And it was very similar. And we got into this, it may have been a walrus dish. And in any case, I found all these weird little connections, and definitely the Pascha around Easter, that bread. It's really a lovely thing to share these traditions, because food is at the heart of people's identification. And I think the way you identify with your culture and then the singing and the coming together and the songs that you remember from childhood just bring people together in a wonderful way. So I'm delighted not only to learn about the connections, but also about the differences.
We still have Sviati Vecher, Holy Supper, at my house, but I think we're one of the few, because you really have to have grown up with this. We gathered at my grandmother's house, my 11 cousins, my sister, brother, aunts, and uncles. We spent several hours first eating and then singing all these kolyadi, which is where I learned them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came to Alaska, and the Eskimo people were singing the same songs, not always well pronounced, but still recognizable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And with more verses than I ever heard in a Ukrainian Orthodox or Catholic church.
Doing one better.
They were one better than us. I mentioned to Kathleen that during the Patriarch of Moscow's visit here 20 years ago, one Ukrainian bishop was left behind because of bad weather. And we tried to cheer him up, and we brought out our star, and we sang kolyadi for him. And then he mentioned, I asked him, how did these customs survive the Soviet occupation? And he said, we all got together at Pochayev Monastery, and each village sang their repertoire, spinning their stars. This word spinning caught my attention, because all the stars I ever saw in Ukraine were like fixed on a pole.
And not spinning.
Not spinning. Mm. But he said, and I said, excuse me, Your Grace, but did you just say spinning? Because he was speaking in Ukrainian or Russian. I don't remember which, but I don't speak very well either one of them. And he said, yes, spinning. I said, is that usual? He said, no, it's in our oblast, Ternopolskaya Oblast. We spin our stars.
Really?
So there's a clue that our spinning stars might even not be unique to Alaska, but they came from one particular county in Ukraine.
Did you say Ternopil?
Ternopil, yeah.
Yeah, that's where my family's from.
mine live there now. They were living further west until they were expelled from Poland in 1945, but they all live in Ternopolskaya Oblast now.
That's amazing. You guys might be
related.
So
we may be relatives. Yeah. Who knows?
And you haven't met each other yet?
No.
Okay. Well, Sonia, you had a question that I don't think I posed to Father Alexei yet. It had to do with a newspaper in Alaska, and you wondered...
Oh, I had just vaguely remembered that one of the earliest Russian Orthodox priests in Alaska was of Ukrainian descent. And I was doing research on something else. This was years ago at the time.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And stored it in the back of my head that this was somebody who had created the first newspaper or...
So Father Alexa is squinting and digging in the back of his memory
banks.
Yeah,
this is going to the bottom of my archival barrel here.
Maybe it's the same person you were mentioning. I don't know. But
no,
anyway, it sounds like this all...
Agape was his first name, which means love in Greek. Agapios Horochenko or something like that.
Huh.
Okay.
He was an anti-Tsarist revolutionary also. He was involved in anti-Tsarist politics from a safe distance, San Francisco. But he had an amazing career. I think there's even a biography of him researched and published. But no, he's from the 1860s or 70s. And not likely to have been the purveyor of our Kolyadi.
Oh.
Okay.
But you're right. He was a kind of famous guy. An exile and a revolutionary who did make it to Alaska.
Yeah, I love the revolutionary side. Of course, Sonia is a newspaper person. I'm a newspaper. You know, it's part of your. That's part of the curiosity. I think it's like finding
Definitely.
Out the first papers and all that. So yeah.
But I'm loving hearing about this and that it's so vibrant and in some ways maybe even more vibrant here today. You know, this is.
Yeah, actually, from looking at Father Alexis' book, it sounded like after World War I and World War II, things were bubbling along here well in Alaska, but because of the war, the source material was drying up, the root was drying up in Europe.
Right. Stalin's oppression of Russia and Ukraine, millions were exiled to Siberia and shot, executed, churches were destroyed. So that's why we had to ask, soon after the collapse of the Soviet Union, this Ukrainian bishop, did this tradition survive at all?
Yeah.
And he said yes, because they gathered secretly and performed their songs.
It is, you know, I know Ukraine is a tug of war right now between the EU and Russia. Is this religion thriving there now? Do you know?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. With the collapse of the Soviet Union,
it just
places
back.
That had lost their churches or never had churches and were forbidden to build churches within years, they had nothing else to do but build their churches. Mm-hmm. The churches were rebuilt all over, especially Western Ukraine.
Yeah. So, and of course, I wanted to talk a little bit about how big it is here, too, because I feel like I read somewhere there were 94 Orthodox priests.
Not priests, parishes.
Parishes, okay.
When I first came to Alaska in 1969-70, we had about 80 parishes, but only 15 priests. So all of us had, when I was ordained, a dozen villages to visit.
Wow.
So you could only get to them like twice a year.
Right.
But St. Herman's Seminary was founded in 1972, opened in 1973. Now we have 55 priests for 100. So each priest has one other village to visit on the average, you see? So it's a huge improvement now. We've gone from 15 and 80 churches to 55 and 100. So,
Wow.
Yeah, I would say we're thriving. We've never been in such good condition in Alaska in the last 220 years since the missionaries arrived in 1794.
Wow, that is interesting. I just wanted to say, if you had any other questions, you've got Father Alexa. He's the resident expert here. Otherwise, I'll say thank you, and we'll talk a little bit more about what you can see in Anchorage, maybe for our audience here in Anchorage. There may be some events. But do you have anything else you want to ask Father Alexa?
No, I'd just love to hear about the Anchorage stuff, but also just wanted to make just to note, based on what you said about that spinning star possibly being a tradition that went back to this one oblast, you know, it just shows the great impact one person can have. Maybe, you know, somewhere along the line, there was one person.
That's right.
Who passed this along. So I think that's pretty neat. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sonia. Appreciate your calling. So I'm going to throw out our phone numbers one more time for folks. It's 550-8433-188-353-5752, or you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. But let's talk about what people can expect to see in Anchorage or on the Kenai.
Well, we have still other regions. Here in Anchorage,
we do. We didn't touch on the Aleutians, and
I would say the Aleutians have probably they have a wonderful tradition. We did a couple hours of recording just last night. It'll be on the Channel 11.
Were you focusing on Aleutian traditions?
It just turned out that most of the people I just announced in church, the TV camera's coming to my house, and we're going to stage a pre-Christmas starring. Uh-huh. And the biggest star was from Bjorka, this now extinct village, the glass star.
And had you ever seen that one before, or was that?
I had seen it once before.
Okay.
I didn't realize it was in the custody of one family because there is no church or village of Bjorka anymore since 1945. So it just turned out most of the people who came were from the Aleutian Islands, St. George, St. Paul, and Onalaska, Nikolsky, and so forth. So it became much more. But there were people from Tyonik, which is Athabascan, from Kodiak Island, and from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Mm-hmm. We didn't have anybody from Southeast. So at the end, when we sang "God Grant You Many Years," somehow we left out the Tlingit because there was no one Tlingit there to
who could remind you.
Well, I know how to do it, but I would have been singing solo. Uh-huh. But we know how to. This is the other exciting thing, because we come together liturgically, and we already know, as Father Larson said, we sing it in Church Slavonic, and we might not know what every syllable means because we don't speak that language.
Right, he said we don't know what
but
it means.
But we sing the same thing in English and in Yupik, so of course we know what it means. Uh-huh. So we can switch languages. We can be very versatile.
Yeah.
And so we can add Tlingit to our repertoire, even if there's no Tlingits in residence. Mm-hmm. So just in case anybody ever shows up from Southeast Alaska, we'll be able to honor them by singing in their language, too.
Completely inclusive.
We're ready. We do Romanian, too, because of the Romanian people here in Anchorage.
Really?
Yes.
Really? That's great. So anyway, I don't want the show to end without us being able to tell folks in our sort of South Central Alaska what I know of a couple. Like I spoke with St. Innocent Cathedral. They will have services tomorrow beginning at 6. Does that sound right?
No, tonight. Tonight at 6.
Oh, it's tonight at 6. Okay.
Yes.
Will there be starring at the...
No.
No, not...
Starring will start after liturgy tomorrow. And everybody has liturgy at 9.
Uh-huh.
So at St. Alexis, we meet at APIA, Aleutian Purple of Islands Association building. We'll have starring starting at the end of our service about 10:30. And then we're adjourning to my house. My house is the first house to be visited with the star. Uh-huh. And we'll have breakfast there. And then we're having vespers at 6, also like the cathedral, on Christmas Day. And we're doing something sort of different. The Serbian Orthodox people have a custom called Slava, not Slavic. And a Slava is the day on which your family was originally converted and baptized, probably 1,000 years ago now in Serbia.
Mm-hmm.
So that we have one Serbian man here in Anchorage, Tomislav Vasilovich, whose family Slava is Christmas Day. And so we always go to his house with the star because he's having his Slava, which is his family feast in memory of his ancestors who converted to Christianity, now in Serbia, 1,000 years ago. But his family has celebrated their family Slava on Christmas every year for all those centuries.
Wow.
And so we honor his Slava, which is a slightly different custom, by taking the star to his house and then enjoying his hospitality.
I think you guys just want a party.
We're a party church. That's it.
Now, what about the Alaska Native Medical Center? I heard there's a tradition of starring there in the afternoon.
I think that's going to be on Friday, but I'm not positive. The Aleutian Pribilof of Islands Association has their elders luncheon on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I think almost all the priests are invited to that elders luncheon at noon at APIA, again, where we have our church services at the end of International Airport Road.
Right.
So we'll have a meal first and then sing. It's sort of the opposite order of things, but it'll be lunchtime. So
yes.
The elders will have their banquet, and then the stars from the different churches are all going to perform their repertoires there.
Oh, wow. Is that open to the public?
I suppose.
I don't know.
I didn't ask.
Yeah.
But certainly when we go after that to ANMC, the Alaska Native Medical Center, where they have the big tree, it's actually in the family clinic across from the main hospital.
Uh-huh.
They always have at least cookies and punch and that
That's
sort
what
of
I've
thing.
Heard. Yeah.
And it's usually the St. Innocent Cathedral star that
We'll be there.
That visits there,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Well, I didn't ask you to sing. I saved you. Thank goodness we were able to pull those carols from the internet. What I was thinking about is you're sort of walking history. I mean, you've got the history book in your head, and it's centuries old, not only in Alaska, but in Europe. And yet, I wonder if the modern times are difficult or threatening. I mean, I was overjoyed that we could hear that music. That's modern technology that made that possible,
right?
Like that. But, you know, are young people coming to the church? You say the church is thriving here. Are they coming?
And even more, the religion was kept persecuted, not just kept under wraps, but persecuted. And in some places, like in Albania, they claim to be the first totally atheistic country in the world, where religion of all sorts were simply eradicated by the communist regimes. But as soon as those regimes collapsed, within a few months of each other, it all came back. You see pictures of Tirana, Albania, with 1 million people attending the Easter service.
Mm-hmm.
It's people to the horizon in every direction.
Yeah, so it doesn't ever get squelched out.
And
it goes underground.
And especially in Russia, people are looking for an identity. They identified only 3 million people ever became committed communists.
Out of
300 million,
what
1% of the population, even with all the propaganda to join the Communist Party, accept the communist ideology, 20 million Christians died. All those 20 million Christians have relatives and descendants today.
Yeah, it has.
So if my family has suffered and our ancestors were shot or killed or exiled to Siberia because of our faith, now that we're free to express it, it's back with
Exactly. Well, you do mention revolutionary feelings and fervor, and it feels like it's there. So
it could be just Putin's propaganda, but I don't think it can be dismissed as that. The Russians are the only church or State Department in Europe saying, "What about the Christians in the Middle East? What about the Christians? What about the Christians in Syria? Mm-hmm. What about this?" And the Christians—they're mostly Orthodox, of course. So there's an affinity there between the Orthodox in Russia and Syria and Palestine and so forth. And I'm sure all the Christians of all faiths and persuasions are grateful for the Russians of all people, the ones we blamed as labeled as the atheists and the evil empire, are the ones who are the only in the international political scene championing the rights and
of Christians,
especially in those troubled areas.
On that upbeat note, I'm going to say thank you, Father Alexa, for coming to Hometown Alaska and talking about Starring and its legacy. And I'd like to thank Father Elia Larson, who called in from Bethel. Next week, Charles Wolforth will be your host, featuring musicians performing with the Anchorage Folk Festival, running from January 21 to 31. That should be a fun show. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.